Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Just like that, second hour's here. Hot Mic with Hunt and Withrow. Outkick.com/watch is where we broadcast live each day. YouTube is where you can find us post-show, clips, highlights, and more. Just subscribe to the channel. And, Chad, we were always on podcasts.
Always on podcasts. In fact, I post a podcast Colin put together of my top five TV show recommendations and trailer recommendations right now. It is a quick listen. People are always asking me, what are you watching? What do you like? So we put it together in a little podcast. You can check that out wherever you get podcasts, along with every episode of Hot Mic, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. You can get your audio only there.
Barrett Salee, you can find him as a contributor at Outkick.com. He joins us now here on Hot Mic. Barrett, good to see you, man.
Good to see you guys, too. You know, it's funny when you're watching TV, talking about TV shows. I actually had a conversation of things to rewatch, and first on the list is 24. I think that's a timeless classic.
That came up in conversation recently with me, too.
I never watched 24, so it would be an original watch for me.
Absolutely.
I've never seen a second of it.
Jack Bauer, let's go.
One that I started back recently, but I had a hard time rewatching. One that I didn't have a hard time, True Detective Season 1. I rewatched that. Okay. It was better than I remembered. The Leftovers, I started and couldn't keep up with it. The one I really want to go back to is The Sopranos. Because now there's been time... Because
that's a good one.
It's such a different era. You know, it comes out when I'm like finishing high school, going into college. So I can kind of reminisce when I see the style of the cell phones on the show and everything else. I got two episodes in. I'm thinking, this is good because it's bringing me way back to a time and place in my life.
Exactly.
When I saw it the first time, which is kind of cool to experience.
What's the most recent show that it has been out recently, that you've rewatched? Mine was Ozark. I've already gone back and rewatched Ozark again.
That's impressive. So that's not a very.
I was thinking about Ozark. I got on The Office. I got on an Office kick.
That's a good one.
And I didn't do it in order. Like it was, you know, because it's on all the time. It's like Friends.
Super,
it's on all the time.
Super fan channel or whatever it is.
And so it popped on, and I was like, "That's a good episode," but I can't remember what happens next. So I picked up in the middle, and it's still good. I mean, it's such a good show. It's timeless.
They have a warehouse somewhere. I can't remember where. We talked with Kevin from The Office about this, where it is set up specifically and
that's right.
Like identical to The Office itself.
And I think it's in Scranton.
Really?
Is it in Scranton?
It's an office experience, they call it.
It's in Scranton.
And I think it's in Scranton.
It's a permanent museum. But you can open a drawer at Jim's desk and it will have something there that is specific to the show.
That's fantastic.
If you're a super fan. It's really cool. Really cool.
That's fantastic.
You can book it for parties and do things like that.
My wedding reception would be there, and my wife would not like that, but it would happen.
It's an incredible idea, no doubt. We're promoting other podcasts. It's fine. Barrett hosts a podcast, The Braves, we can ask him about too.
Yeah.
A podcast I listen to is called Stick the Landing. It's by Andy Greenwald at the Ringer Network, and it talks about the best series finales. Not even the best, like some of the worst, but they go back and they ask the question, did this great show stick the landing? And they're saving, the biggest one of all time for him is Lost. And he said, I'm saving that for season two. But I mean, they go back to Twin Peaks, The Office is 1 hour and a half episode. They go back and look at the Office. And it's interesting because you're rewatching it now. They said The Office kind of ends three different times. They could have ended it with Jim and Pam's wedding, could have been the series finale. Then it kept going. It could have ended when Michael Scott left with like, you know, five episodes left in one of the seasons, the last seasons. And then they had the actual ending. But when I listen to this podcast, it makes me want to go back and watch those episodes. So then I want to go back and watch the finale of the show.
It's like you're in my head because I had a conversation about this and a show that didn't stick the landing. And that was How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
And I want to go back and watch How I Met Your Mother. It's a phenomenal show. But it was like eight seasons in, they're like, oh damn, we got to finish it. How do we stick the landing? And they did not. I mean, it was like me on the vault trying to stick that landing. And so I have another one though. I don't know if this is a podcast. I know it's a YouTube, is Zach Morris's Trash. Have you seen this?
Oh yes. Yes.
No. Oh my goodness.
It's so it good. It is
so good. It talks about how horrible of a person Zach Morris actually was in Saved by the Bell, because he never even watched his shows. So it goes back like him talking about things that went on. And then this one dude, the voiceover guy, is like, well, Zach Morris did this and he disrespected this girl, whatever. And Zach Morris is trash.
Yeah, it's terrific. I think it's a comedian who does it and just splices these highlights together of like a single episode. Everything he did that shows how terrible of a human being Zach Morris was. It's really smart.
There still are shows awesome. That I wish we could go back and be. I would love to go back and watch and see if it holds up. Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh, wow.
Oh, yes.
But I've never come across that. I've even tried to look at it on YouTube. I don't know if it's just lost to the ether or whatever. And then there's other shows like Hey Dude. You remember that?
Yeah.
Hey Dude was really good. Christine Taylor.
Yes.
Melody.
Well, like,
what about
I was listening.
What about Salute Your Shorts?
Oh, that's great. One.
These old Nickelodeon shows are great. But even like our childhood, Married with Children. I think about that as like that's the first like that was groundbreaking at the time, right?
Yes,
Trash TV, that and Roseanne. And I'm thinking, I do not remember the finale of Married with Children. Remember they brought in that extra kid, Seven?
Yeah.
Like they had a kid in the end that was the little blonde boy. It was very odd. And I'm thinking, how did that show end? But also the How I Met Your Mother is a great example, Barrett. I did not love it when I watched it originally, but if we went back and watched it, would we change our opinion on the rewatch? That the podcast kind of gets into that. Like they'll go back and read what they wrote about the ending of Mad Men was another one. Read what they wrote, and he loved it originally and rewatched it and still liked it, but not quite as much. And other finales you rewatch, you love it the second go around. True Detective, I didn't love the finale the first go around. On my rewatch, it was perfect. I'm watching it. This is the perfect conclusion of this series.
I think that's how Sopranos is.
And it's interesting because I hated the Sopranos ending. How it just, everybody hated it, right?
Cut to black.
I'd love to know what I think now, because I have no idea what I would think. I'm 20 years older than I was back then. So I'd love that. And my kids kind of got stuck on Friends. So the last episode of Friends was like a huge deal at the time. Remember? Because some people had TiVo, only the rich kids had TiVo, and you had to watch it live. And I remember not liking it. And now I'm like, oh, that's good. I like it. It wasn't great, but it was a good way to end it.
You know, spoiler alert, Ross and Rachel got together. That's what we all wanted in the end. And that's exactly what happened.
Yes.
Barrett Salee.
Sometimes the simplest solution is the right one.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. Barrett Salee, you can read, he makes sense as a columnist at Outkick. Does this Super League report make sense to you? because I like it. Chad went through some scenarios of what the seven divisions could be. And I like the structure. What I don't buy into is the fact that, well, Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey aren't involved in this. And because of that, I don't know how serious I should take this.
Well, you shouldn't take it serious, because there's a reason it was leaked now. And there was a reason that that these people that are involved, and I'm talking about the professional people, are on their last gasp. They're trying to save it. Because when you have dinners canceled with the SEC, the Big 12, and the Big 10, your proposal sucks. Like, flat out, your proposal sucks. And so what I think this is, and it's not, and I think this is just business, how things operate. The people that are involved, which is Roger Goodell's top lieutenant, the owner of the 76ers, and some other people, all these are professional people. And nothing is gaining traction with them. That's why they're having dinner meetings canceled. And so what do? You last gasp effort, release it to The Athletic, see if you can gain something on it. And the truth of the matter is, it's a terrible idea, because if 70 of the 80 teams that are in this postseason are not going to be relegated, then what's the point? You're basically, having the same system dressed up differently like the NFL. And I think what's hilarious about this is, and I said this on my show today, it's like, look, you guys are going to A, essentially keep the power teams, and B, you're going to pay them a different scale based on how desirable they are for TV. That's going to create more problems. At least in this day and age, like the SEC teams get paid the same amount. The Big Ten teams get paid the same amount. Now you're just going to say, oh, Alabama, you get paid more. Notre Dame, you get paid more. Like, what is that going to accomplish? I mean, it's just going to make things even more dysfunctional. And look, I'm all about dysfunction. I love college athletics because it is beautifully dysfunctional. But packaging this as a way to streamline things while hidden in the details, essentially saying you're going to make the difference between the haves and the have-nots significantly worse, is just backwards. And it goes to something that I've said a long time. You don't want professional people dealing with college athletics, because people in the pros, administrators in the pros, have no friggin' clue how any of this works. And that's, I think, proven here with this system or this proposal, which again, I think this is, it was running out of gas so much that they were like, all right, no one's taking our meetings. No one's taking this seriously. Let's get this out in the open to see if anybody likes it at all. And I mean, I think the truth of the matter is a lot of people punched holes in it.
Yeah. And it's also interesting to me, not just the professional, the NFL, the 76ers owner, the presidents that were leaked that's involved with it, Gordon Gee at West Virginia and the president at Syracuse. Those are two programs that are kind of grasping up, right? It would be in their interest to be in it. Hey, we got to make sure we're in this 70-team super conference, because just like you said, Barrett, if people are going to question, okay, why does Alabama, Notre Dame, and Ohio State get so much more money than everyone else, the same questions are going to flow the other way. And people are going to say, again, I'm looking at the books. And why is Vandy, Wake Forest, and Mississippi State a part of this? Well, why is Cal and SMU guaranteed to get a revenue share in whatever we're doing? Which leads me to believe, which I don't want anything to change with it, because I love college football the way it is. But when that inevitable change happens, it's going to be more like 40 to 50 teams that we're talking about in the end.
Yeah, I think so. And the telltale sign about this also is that the three conferences that skipped the dinner, the one Power Four conference that didn't was the ACC, which is not coincidentally the one that's about to collapse on itself. So I'm sure the other three are saying, look, the ACC wants to discuss this. Well, why? It's on its last legs. Let's just poach them. Let's just keep the same system and just poach all of their teams, which is not surprising. And again, why the Syracuse president is involved in this, because he's in a place in the SEC where that neighborhood's about to get blown up. So it's like all these things are sort of intertwined. And I think when all is said and done, the idea of 80 teams going, and look, relegation, I think it's fun, whatever, but 80 teams going to essentially a postseason is dumb, because the rest of them are, you know, obviously there's the actual postseason, which is 16 teams, but essentially 80 teams are eligible, which, I mean, how many and realistically are realistic in that 18 or 16 team playoff? I mean, there's not what, maybe 20, 25 teams have a realistic shot and only five have a chance to win the national championship. It's not going to be any different, but to me, this is an example of a proposal that has gone downhill quickly. And I think the people involved know it. And it's a nice idea in terms of, look, and I've said this for a long time, I want the BCS back. It's not going to happen. I was okay with the four when it was announced. I'd love to have it back now. I hate the 12. I hate the 16. I hate wherever we're going from now. But I'm like a political candidate who actually concedes a race. I know conceding political races is something that's like foreign in this day and age, but I actually have conceded the race. And look, if we're going to make it better, fine. I don't think it's better, but if people are going down that road, I will fully support a system that makes sense to me. And this system makes no sense to me, and I don't see how it makes sense to anybody involved. And certainly from a fan perspective, you know, they're trying to sell you on the cool idea of relegation, and that's it.
Barrett Salih with us, outkick.com. You can read his columns. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. How much, or what's going on behind the scenes with ESPN controlling a lot of this? Because in thinking about both sides, even with this Super League, you have the NFL and Brian Rolapp, who is he's the chief media and business officer right behind Roger Goodell. The NFL, of course, just bought a portion, or is a partner now with ESPN. ACC certainly has the media rights with ESPN. And on the flip side, we know with the relationship of the SEC and ESPN, and thinking about the number of programs needed for that network with the amount of inventory they have to fill with all these different branches on their tree and all these channels and apps and where they want to go with the direct-to-consumer app that they want to build and partner with, are they really pulling the strings behind the scenes in your mind?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at the commissioners now, right? Tony Petitti has a TV background. Yormark has a TV background. Even George Kliavkov, who was a disaster in the Pac-12, he had a TV background. So yeah, all of these commissioners coming in, and it's all intertwined, right? Everything with college athletics is all about TV. And the streaming aspect of it is interesting because there's everybody's got inventory. You can put anything on ESPN3 now. I mean, I watch my 8-year-old daughter plays 8U softball, and we watched Oklahoma softball because why not? Right. It's there for you. So I don't think it's necessarily the inventory. It's more about what's compelling for traditional viewers because it is still hard. You know, I kind of go back to something I said a long time ago. My parents want the one button. They want power. That's it. For us, the Utes, I'm 43, you know, we can handle three buttons. But, you know, for older folks, they have to have the ability to just find the content where they've always found it. So I think from a TV perspective, they're sort of trying to figure out that nice balance. But ESPN and Fox and everybody else, NBC, are all pulling the strings. They understand, hey, we've got to make this the product that we're paying for. We're paying a ton of money. How do we get it available to as many people as possible? And ultimately, I think the way to do that is, in their minds anyway, to try to make it like the NFL, to try to make it like every other professional sport, because they understand that that specific method works. The problem is, in my mind anyway, again, college athletics, beautifully dysfunctional, that method will not work because it simply can't. There are too many teams. There are too much of a dichotomy between haves and have-nots and financial situations. So they're pulling the strings, but they're pulling them the way that normal TV executives do. And I think smart folks have started to realize, hey, we can't do things the same way, which is part of the reason why these NFL-style proposals seem to kind of get stuck in purgatory. And at the same time, it's why, you know, we had realignment 10 years ago to begin with.
Barrett, and also just reading between the lines of what we see here, does it tell you anything that it doesn't surprise us, right? That the Big Ten and the SEC didn't make the dinner. Neither did the Big 12. Neither did the Big 12. How did they separate themselves with Brett Yormark joining and being a part of the trio instead of the duo with the ACC and being a part of this?
They're not getting sued.
Well,
by
Brett Yormark's he's a ninja. Like I'm convinced that dude's
a
ninja. He is
too.
Really good. That guy is really good at what he does. And I think what Yormark did, if I was him, I'd look around and say, okay, I'm not a Big Two, but I'm not the ACC.
Right.
And that's a good thing. Right. So if he wants to hear these people out, okay, fine. Let it be third-hand information, second-hand information, because he wants to look like he's coming from a position of strength, which in relative to the ACC, he is, right? So if the ACC is interested in this, and they had a meeting, in late February or something?
Yep.
You know, if the ACC is interested in it, I think Brett Yormark's natural reaction should be and was kind of raise an eyebrow like, are you sure? Well, if you're doing this, maybe I shouldn't. Because the ACC is trying to save itself. And I think in the Big 12's case, look, what if they can pick off Clemson or Florida State or Miami? The SECs might not want all those teams. In fact, I don't think the SEC is going to want Florida State and Clemson. So if you're the Big 12, you've got to look at it and say, okay, I've got to make nice with the people who count. And the people who are unstable, got to stay away from them. And that's the ACC. So if let's just say you're going to start courting Clemson and Florida State, you got to look like a power. So how are you a power? You go align with the people who think this is a stupid idea and not the people who think this is a smart idea, because those are the same people that screwed you over to begin with.
And someone's definitely keeping Yormark informed, right? Like that's the connection. And the job he's done over the last 2 years with that conference maybe doesn't get enough credit for what we have seen across college sports.
No, he doesn't get enough credit. I mean, in this situation, he's not new at this. He's never done this before. all hell's breaking loose. The whole world is crumbling around him. And all he does is go out and get Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado. I mean, this is a big deal. I mean, that's a compelling football conference. Tomorrow I'm having Chris Plank on my show, and we talk about how, in the grand scheme of things, the Big 12 might be the most entertaining conference in college football next year. Part of it's because they don't have a power, and that's fine. There's going to be some wild, crazy, fun football games in that conference because there are teams that match up very well against each other. And so, yeah, I mean, he's done a great job. And I think by aligning himself with the Haves, even though he's obviously kind of falling on their coattails, it makes the ACC scared. And I think if you're Florida State and Clemson, you like that because I think you can have a landing spot there.
You know, all ADs claim that they have that binder in their desk somewhere locked away, that if I lose my tennis coach or my women's basketball coach, I have this list of names I'm going to call in a contingency plan, and these are the coaches that I want to hire and go after. Brett Yormark is that commissioner to me,
yes.
Right? Like, he's the guy who actually has that binder and says, if you mess with me here, I'm going to pivot and go do this. If you take Texas and Oklahoma, I'm going to go get BYU, Utah, Houston, and then, if UCF. The Pac-12 is crumbling, I'm going to take Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado. He always has a plan for what's next. That's a compliment.
And
to
it's not always a perfect plan. But it's a good one.
It's the best of a bad set every time. So he survived taking the best of what's available each and every turn. One basketball question for you, Bear. I know it's not your specialty, but Eric Musselman, official now, leaving Arkansas to take the head coaching job at USC. USC historically is not a better basketball program than Arkansas. People come back and argue, well, it's LA and it's USC, and I'm sure they're paying a lot of money. Something's up with Eric Musselman in Arkansas. With the amount of success he had and the awful season he had this one year, to want to get out so much that it was reported he was interviewing for the job. This was not an immediate offer. Word got out he was out in LA interviewing for the gig. What do you make of that? And kind of what that says right now about Arkansas and USC, if it says anything at all.
I think to me, it kind of confirms that a lot of the stuff that we sort of heard about all year is true, or a lot of it. Because we had heard, I guess it was December or January, that Arkansas is really dysfunctional, right? There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes.
A lot of infighting. They had one player leave mid-season. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so obviously that stuff can, and I think did, rub off on that team this year. And can you fix that if you're Eric Musselman? I mean, it's probably easier to fill it from a personnel perspective, but from a culture perspective, that's a little different. I could see a situation. Look, Arkansas is a better basketball program than USC, or at least it should be. But if you have a coach who is just sick of dealing with all the nonsense that apparently has been with the program for about a year, why not try to, why stick around? If a program like USC wants you, which again is a step down, but how much of a step down? Well, they're going to pay you pretty much the same. You get to live in LA. You still have a lot of the same advantages that you do in the SEC. You're going to the Big Ten. That's pretty cool too. It seemed like it was kind of an escape for Eric Musselman. And like, honestly, I get it. Would he have taken other jobs? Maybe not. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, are you going to get fired a year later? Okay, maybe might as well get out now. Soft landing spot. Be good to go. To me, that's kind of what it felt like.
With all the spring practices and things going on in football, is there money changes and makes everything better in some cases? This could be a lot more hype behind this, right? I feel like I've paid less attention to it than I ever have. Across college football, is there something that could be done in the off season that creates more buzz for college football?
No, not real. Well, there is.
Scrimmages?
I mean, I think for the major programs, probably not. Just because, you know, back in what, the mid 2010s, you had the spring game festivities. You had 94,000 at Nebraska. You had, you know, Ludacris playing at Georgia. Now coaches realize, hey, those games are on TV. We probably shouldn't show our opponents things. And so now you kind of go through the situation, like Auburn plays this weekend. I went to Auburn. I had no clue that they played this weekend, and I cover the dang sport. So it's like, I think the way to do this is synchronize the portal, right? And the spring portal, I think, is better than the winter portal. you can have that be a news trigger for a very long time. And the NFL does this great. The NBA does this great. They find little news triggers throughout the course of the offseason to make things work. I think maybe moving that to a point before spring practice and making that the only transfer portal window might actually be a really good idea. It's not going to happen because the NCAA doesn't make good decisions, but I think it would be a decent one. Other than that, I mean, you can't really move group of five football to the spring. We tried the FCS thing in the spring after COVID. Nobody really cared. Yep. I thought people would care, but nobody did. So to me, I think it's just about, if you streamline the calendar just in general, you know, make the first Wednesday of February the actual National Signing Day, eliminate the first one, have the portal sort of set up to, you know, get people excited about spring practice or whatever. I think just fixing the calendar in general, spacing things out that already exist, I think would go a long way.
And my theory also on this, Barrett, is that I think fans have a little bit of fatigue with how fluid the sport is right now. And it's more and more difficult to latch in and say, I'm going to read about my team's preparation this spring because I really want to know about these young guys on the roster, because fans aren't naive, especially in the SEC. They know this guy could be here today and gone tomorrow for a better NIL deal or not enough playing time or whatever it is. So I think fans are saying, hey, I'm going to check back 3 weeks before the season starts, see who's practicing, see the projected starting lineup, and I'm going to go all in on my team during the season, knowing that no one's even going to look at the class of the player anymore, because it doesn't matter if they're a freshman or sophomore, because it's year to year. It's game to game.
It's
100%
accurate. Yeah. It's regressed back to 15, 20 years ago when SEC Media Days actually was an informative event.
Yes.
It is still a circus, but back in the day, like, you actually had player depth charts to talk about. You had things that were interesting that might not have been around in spring. Like, it became a circus, Media Days. But now, it is more like a kickoff in the sense that you actually get to learn about a team that might have changed a lot since the last time the head coach had taken a hot mic, you know, after the spring game.
Barrett Salee has been our guest. You can check him out with the Braves Report, also SiriusXM College and at Outkick.com. Always great perspective, man. We love having you on.
Thanks, y'all. My pleasure.
Yep, there's Barrett Salee.
Chop on.
Great start for the Bravos.
3-2, not bad. I would have liked to have won that
hitting
game. I would have liked to play that game in Chicago yesterday, in the freezing cold, where they postponed it to June. But no, a good start in Philly. They had been swept the last two times they opened the season in Philly. They got swept both times, and they took 2 out of 3 to open the season
against
there.
Some pitchers,
so that's not
that
bad.
Traditionally,
Zach Wheeler did shut them down. Then they went to their bullpen and they lit up that bullpen and didn't stop lighting them up for the rest of the weekend after that.
Stay tuned. Hot Mike with Hunter Withrow rolls on. Sixth and Peabody, our location. Yeehaw Beer, Old Smoky Moonshine. It's Hot Mike with Hunter Withrow. Outkick.com/watch. YouTube. Hope to subscribe to the channel. Just search out Outkick there. And, of course, wherever you download your audio on podcast. You can also watch the full show replay at outkick.com/shows. So you can go over there and check us out there. Chad, we discussed this at length yesterday about the Anthem Police, Louisiana governor. Well, he's
the chief of police.
He's the chief of police.
Chief of Anthem Police.
The Anthem Police. And he's, doubled down on his Anthem stance.
Governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, who is now calling for consequences for that. Governor, welcome to you. And we know that you're a huge LSU fan. You've got the shirt on. So why are you calling out the players?
Yeah, and I'm not calling out the players or Coach Mulkey. I support Coach Mulkey. My statement said that. I mean, look, I think this is a bigger question. This is a bigger problem for collegiate sports nationally and in Louisiana. I just sent out a letter to each one of our college boards telling them that those college boards should put in place a policy that respects the national anthem. The national anthem is as much a part of American sports as is the actual game that's being played. And the fact that there is not a policy that says, listen, these players are going to be out there and respect the flag and respect those that go out there and protect us is really disrespectful in and of itself. So it's unfortunate that LSU was not there at that particular time. Iowa was on the field. That highlighted the particular problem. And what we're going to do is work in Louisiana and say, listen, college athletes need to understand that in order to be truly united, in order to truly have civics and civility, We all need to be united under one flag and respect that anthem.
Well, I know so many of our viewers firmly agree with you, and so many of us, the America we know, you're at the concession stand, the anthem starts, you throw down your food, you run to find the flag, you chuck your hat, you do anything you can to stand up and be there when the national anthem is sung, whether it's a Little League game or March Madness or whatever it may be.
Doubling down, Chad. Well,
the America we know, when you're getting a hot dog at the concession stand, you better not make that purchase, even if they're asking for your card right then and there.
Not,
you better
stop and stand. That's just not the case. If you're out there, if you're in the restroom line right before kickoff, or if you're in the hot dog line, Chad, before kickoff, you've timed it up as well because you know when kickoff is going to be. It's never right at 7 o'clock. It'll be at 7:03. Or whenever. And you know, if you're especially in college athletics, you know when the band's on the field and whenever the team's going to run out of the tunnel. Well, and you try to time it up where you're in your seat for that. Yeah. That's just realistic.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Brian Kelly should have channeled the governor of Louisiana when he was trying to do that fake Cajun Southern accent.
Oh,
by the way,
we should compare the two.
That guy, he's got
family.
It down. That was a legitimate accent right there instead of Brian Kelly going with I want to thank my family for being here.
He needs to say athlete, apparently.
Hot as butter on a biscuit. I'm melting up here today. He's got a fan coming out. He's got one of those handkerchiefs dabbing the sweat on his forehead.
Do you think he just randomly reached into his closet or drawer that morning and put on an LSU polo?
Oh, my gosh. This is just so insane. The whole scene. What happened the moment we cut to that clip and I saw him in the LSU polo? I laughed and tried not to laugh too hard into the microphone. Yeah. This is just...
Why is he not wearing a shirt with a flag on it?
This is old one-note Willie over here playing that one note to his bass as hard as he can play it. He knows one note, baby, and I'm going to play that bad boy until the string pops off as I play that G chord over and over again right into the ears of my constituency. Come on over here, guys. I'm going to tell you about the American flag, how much America means to me. It doesn't mean nothing to you. I sound like John McClane. But I'm going to play that G chord right into your ears right here over and over. It's so stupid. Here's what they could do if you really wanted to. Like his whole thing now is, I'm not going to take back what I said, but I'm not going to actually give you a way to do what I'm saying. I'm just going to go on Fox News and double down on this idiotic take. But if you really wanted to change it, the way you do it is, now the national anthem has to be played after they announce the starting lineup right before tip. So you announce the starting lineup, the lights stay off. The spotlight is on the American flag, and before the ref tips the ball, both teams are standing there right before tip. You play the national anthem, you tip the ball, and you play the game.
And that's what they do for title games. That's what they do in the NBA Finals. Why do they do that? Because the network airs it live.
But if you want to talk about the height of things that politicians need not mind their business with, it is that. I just gave you the solution. That's the bill. That's what every state could put into action and say, we are now legislating the state universities play the national anthem after the starting lineups and before the ball is tipped so all of our state universities can properly honor the flag. That is a waste of taxpayer dollar. That is a waste of your time, Governor. That's a waste of everything because this is not an issue. There are many issues facing our great country. This is not one of them. So you can go, that clean LSU polo that I'm not sure how often you wear it. You can go take
look
that off.
Look brand new.
Fold it back up. You can put it back in your closet. Put on your suit and tie again and get back to the work of being the leader of the state of Louisiana and stop speaking about something you don't know enough about where you are being one-note Willie once again playing to your constituency. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
I'm tired of the stupidity and the fact that people don't understand that we're watching satire. Take place right in front of us.
Well, and then you had the kneeling police where it was during 2016 where the media members who would normally go up and try to get a chocolate chip cookie were now not during the anthem. They're with binoculars trying to figure out who's holding whose arm and who's in lockstep, who's standing, who's not, and it just became this rinse and repeat every single week, and it was something that the networks didn't even air. Anyone that was that had the NFL game, they're not showing the anthem. What are they doing? They're cutting to a commercial break to get another spot in during that minute and 45 seconds.
Yeah.
That's what we would do with the Titans Radio Network. We would end our pregame show at a very specific time because we knew exactly on the dot when the anthem was supposed to start. They rehearse the anthem prior to letting fans in the building. You know how long it's going to be, and you know whether or not your break is long enough. And you come back, you hit the open, and the announcers are not talking over the anthem. That's what happens. If it's so mandate that the networks have to carry it and they can't air a commercial
and
instead.
And that was like, you know, that was was an actual protest. So the players that were kneeling were actually protesting
But
something.
Even those that were standing were being like, dissected on what they were doing.
How they were standing. Did they have his hand on his heart?
Correct.
Was the hand behind the back? Yeah. Everybody started nitpicking every part
of
that.
Whose hand was on whose shoulder?
This is even worse because Kim Mulkey said, we didn't even know when the anthem was being played. They weren't trying to make some statement.
No.
They were trying to get, as I heard Dan Dockage say on Don't At Me, get their orange slices and a little bit more Gatorade and get the game prep in and pray before they took the court. That's what was happening with LSU during the time. So
what I'm hearing is he doesn't want them to pray.
Yeah, but I mean, and this is...
I mean, you could flip it back on him.
Like, this is what...
Are you telling them not to pray in the locker room?
What drives me nuts is, like, him doing that, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't affect anything. Because anyone watching him is probably like, man, this guy's making a heck of a lot of sense now.
Chad, by and large, in college football, including LSU, what do? They're in the locker room. They're not on the field. And that has to do with some logistical, I mean, it makes sense. You have, what, how many band members are there roughly? 200? 250? I don't know.
Too many.
And then you have...
Too many.
Then you have 100 players on each sideline, right? Just the logistics of how many people you would have on the field. That's why they don't do it, by and large.
I mean, it's...
So, it's just...
It's so crazy that I wish the governor would be the one to start this and just said, you know what? I saw a video. I didn't research their game protocol or what they do before the game. I didn't talk to Kim Mulkey about it. I reacted to the video. I believe that you should stand for the anthem. But now that I've heard Kim Mulkey's explanation, I know they were not blatantly dishonoring the flag or the anthem or anything else. So I retract my statement. It's not an issue with this LSU women's team, and I will go back to the business of leading the state of Louisiana. I wish one time a politician would say that, just that right there. Just admit, hey, I got a little carried away. I saw a video. I didn't know the full story behind it. I tweeted something out. Should have put more thought into it. No big deal. Back to work over here. You know, I'll stay in my lane and out of LSU women's basketball because clearly, even though I'm a purported huge LSU fan, didn't watch a single game of theirs this year, wasn't in the arena for it because I didn't know that they're never there for the national anthem. They haven't been all year. Did not know that going in. Just say that instead of doubling down and going on television shows and talking about all this nonsense again. I pray for that to happen at some point.
Chad, tonight we'll be at the Preds game.
We will.
And we will be standing with our hand over our heart for the national anthem.
We will be honoring. Hutton, this is my first Preds game. First Preds game in over 2 years, by the way. I think I've been to a Preds game in 2 years.
Do you think there will be those in the concourse that will not necessarily be saluting the flag because they hear the Star-Spangled Banner, but they are in line for
a beer? There's going to be a number of people that do that.
Of course.
There'll be some that stop and then some that continue moving along their way.
Including some that may still be in the locker room.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for federal legislation or state legislation to punish those people.
No.
That's the difference.
Or pull contracts or scholarships.
I'll go ahead and say it right here. I'll never run for elected office. So there's no, don't worry, everybody. If you're in my constituency, if you're in my district, you don't have to worry about me not punishing those who are continuing to order their hot dog during the national anthem. You never got to worry about that because I will never run for public office.
Assuming
I've
the worst
stated it right
is not
here,
the best,
and I will
policy.
Stick to that consistently. I'm not running for public office, even though I hear people who have, and I think I probably should. I probably should.
Chad, you have my vote.
Thank you, Hutton.
Governor Withrow,
you would have mine.
House of Cards.
Yes, I would demand you just call me governor.
Can I be minority whip?
We're great friends for many years, and I every time I'm around you, this would be my bit with all my close friends. You'd be like, hey, Withrow, I didn't, no, please, governor.
Governor.
Governor. I need you to come meet. So, no, Governor Withrow, please. Every time, Governor.
C. Thomas.
See, it's Governor C. Thomas Withrow, please. Full name, full title.
Oh, that would be the name of the school they would name after you.
And if they gave me some like weird, like ceremonial, almost king-like military garb to wear, I'd wear it everywhere, like the dictator, like Sacha Baron Cohen is the dictator. I'd wear that style outfit everywhere as the governor.
You would look just like Francois von Schmitto.
Francois von Schmitto, a man who knew how to wear a uniform and wear it well.
Yes, he did. But stay tuned for Straight Ahead here on the Hot Mic. Sixth and Peabody, our location, Yeehaw Beer, Old Smoky Moonshine. Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow rolls on here at outkick.com/watch. Bronny James in the portal.
He's portaling. He's going to portal right over to Tyler's Ohio State Buckeyes. That's the big rumor. He's going to be at Ohio State.
And then he'll potentially portal again to Vegas.
Yeah.
When LeBron James becomes.
Portal won't stop. It's going to be like a constant portal through Ohio State for a year and then to Vegas.
Yes. I mean, is it just a foregone conclusion he's headed there? He's going to be a Buckeye?
That's what everybody thinks, but I mean, he has not said one way or the other. We're going to get Casey Alexander in again on Monday, and he's very outspoken about the problem with all of this, especially for, understandably so, someone like him who coaches in the Missouri Valley Conference, because that conference is just getting ripped apart, including his team, with the best players entering the portal and going getting paid to go to high major programs.
Yeah.
He's got a player by the name of Cade Tyson, who was the Missouri Valley Conference Freshman of the Year. He's a 6'7 shooter at Belmont, and he's entered the portal. I just Googled his name today because I was reading something about him, and he has been contacted already once he entered the portal by Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, Indiana, Tennessee, among others.
Now, when did he officially enter the portal?
March 25th.
Okay, so think about what those programs are doing.
So last week.
Think about what those programs are doing. They're all in the tournament.
Yeah, well, yeah, a number of them.
And they're having to contact players in the portal.
Yeah.
And they're also prepared. The whole schedule is just out. It's out of whack. It's so stupid that the portal opens the Monday after Selection Sunday. And then it becomes Selection Monday, really, for players that want to leave and select a new program. They should back it up. It should be starting right now.
Yes, it should be starting now, and they should look at the whole schedule for football and basketball. It's also, it's still going to come down to culture and those that can identify guys who will fit in their culture even when they bring him in as a transfer, right? I really think Dalton Kinect at Tennessee is the perfect example. That was the perfect fit. That guy got better in the SEC.
And there wasn't a bidding war for him, right?
I mean, think about that. His points per game average went up from Northern Colorado to Tennessee. He got better defensively.
Yeah.
He had a one-year grooming period where he's going to be the runner-up for player of the year nationally behind Zach Edey. And he's going to be a top 10, 15 pick in the NBA draft. If you're Tennessee and you can't sell that, you're doing something wrong. Like, they need to be after some of the top scorers in the portal and just say, look, you want to come here and work on your defense and get looks from NBA scouts, and we can turn you – look at what we did with Dalton Kinect. Look at what happened in the 1 year he was here. Look how you could help us go on another run in the NCAA tournament, get a step or two further. I mean, there's a very easy
Gokey
sales pitch.
Does Gokey have any eligibility left?
I think he's done. I think he's 25 and done. Oh. I think he's going to be playing in
who knows anymore.
What was formerly known as Yugoslavia is where he's going to be playing next for a year or two. We'll get into it, Casey Alexander, but that's the sad part of that level.
Yeah.
Now, they're going to get some cast-offs from high major also that's going to come in and help them right away. That aren't bad guys that just weren't getting playing time at another program that can go down and be really good, like a DJ Burns. You know, he went from Tennessee to Winthrop and then propelled back up to NC State and is now the star of the tournament. But it's a hard knock life for those programs at that mid-major level.
Tiger Woods, hard knock life, he's giving up sex for the Masters, which is underway next week. That, according to a report, a friend of the 48-year-old golfer says he's focused, he's really working hard in the gym, he's eating right, and he's even eliminated sex.
He does that now when he's preparing. No sex until the tournament is over. He doesn't want anything to take away his focus. And I'm thinking, like, man, think about Tiger if he has to withdraw from the tournament, like in round two.
Yeah, everybody's going to immediately point to that.
I gave up everything for this
and
moment.
In the words of Mickey from Rocky, women weaken legs. And that is what Tiger Woods is taking to heart this week. Women weaken legs. The great Mickey, Burgess Meredith, RIP. He said those words.
No Week Show. We start tomorrow.